This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
When you fill out a form for a loan or a job application and you get to the part about education, there's that choice right between college degree and high school diploma that says, some college. Well, apparently, a whole lot of people check that box, and one state is trying to get those people back on track to a degree.
We have someone that will hold their hand all the way through the program. It's concierge-based advising that will help students to stay in school. They stopped out for some reason. We want to make sure that they're very successful as they come back to school.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll learn about a program called Complete Florida. Then we'll hear about students in the Northeast struggling with tougher graduation requirements, and we'll spend an academic minute finding out if your goals are making you depressed. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. If you've been thinking about going back to school to finish your degree, the state of Florida and the University of West Florida have a new program just for you. It's called Complete Florida, and it's specifically designed to help people who have some college credit use that credit and life experience to complete a degree. Here to talk about that program is Dr. Pam Northrup, Associate Provost and Executive Director of the Innovation Institute at the University of West Florida in Pensacola. I asked her how the program got started.
The legislature determined about a year ago that the University of West Florida should lead an effort called Complete Florida. It is for the 2.2 million adults in Florida that have some college and no degree. The goal is to get these students back to school, finish a degree, and move into a job where there are opportunities.
There are that many that have some college and no degree.
Yes, 2.2 million in Florida alone.
How many schools are participating in this in the state?
Okay. There are 11 institutions that are participating in the state. So University of West Florida is the lead institution, and we've designed the model and the processes for Complete Florida. We have partners at universities, other universities in Florida, other state colleges in Florida, and privates around the state.
Are these on-campus classes or online classes?
Yeah, they're all fully online and accelerated so that students, if they're interested in going back to school, there are six different times in a year that they could actually start their degree programs.
What are the different degrees that are being offered? I know UWF is offering three.
Yes, UWF is offering three, and there are 53 degree programs that are options for any student that wants to go back to school and finish their degree. They're in the areas of information technology, so several programs under information technology, business, healthcare, education, and then we have two or three general programs for those folks that have a lot of credit and they really just need that credential to finish up and get the check in the box. We've got liberal studies and those kind of programs for those students.
And these classes, say you wanted to, I'm just going to pull one out here, say you wanted a Bachelor of Arts in Health Records, which is being offered by St. Thomas University.
You could get it anywhere in Florida, fully online. So there is a process, there's a call center, a number that they can call, and the person that will work with them and help them figure out what's the best program for them. It may very well be that specific program from St. Thomas that they want to move into. We'll have someone help them get their application complete, get all the things that they need to do to apply for admissions. And then we have someone that will hold their hand all the way through the program. It's concierge-based advising that will help students to stay in school. They stopped out for some reason anyway to begin with. We want to make sure that they're very successful as they come back to school so they can get it anywhere they want in the state of Florida.
That hand-holding has got to really help some people who probably might be of an age thinking, I'm too old to do this.
You know, a lot of people do believe that. Before we built the model for Complete Florida, we took the time to really talk to people that are in this demographic. So not the students that have already said, I'm coming back to school, not just someone that is mid-career, but those that are in the demographic, some college, no degree, that have not yet chosen to come back to school. And we learned all kinds of things from these students. We talked to some that were in their 20s that said, you know, I'll go back to school whenever I see a degree that makes me advance in my job. So we learned that. We also learned from these students that many times they're going back to school to be a role model for their kids or their grandkids. It's not always about the check in the box for them. It's about being a role model, because when you have a college degree, you impact two future generations, and that's significant. We also talked to people that were a little bit older that had experiences taking online courses in the past, maybe 10, 15 years ago. They don't want anything to do with that. And we've talked to people who had this vision of going onto a campus and sitting next to a 20-year-old. They don't want to do that either. So what we've tried to do is keep in mind the adult learner, someone that is already busy with their lives, whether they're homemakers or whether they're already in the workforce somewhere, and try to wrap the education around their lives to make it work for them where they are and what they're doing. And so the hand-holding is critical. We want to make sure that the students are successful.
There's one of the degrees being offered through UWF I found interesting. It was for registered nurses. Tell us a little about that one.
Well, it's great. The RN to BSN program. We have a fantastic nursing program at UWF. I can't say enough great things about the faculty and the courses that they teach and the students that go through the program. The RN to BSN program is one where students that are already RNs get the opportunity to take that next step in their career. And there are new guidelines in hospitals that require a certain percentage of their nurses to move to that BSN level. So this is a huge need in the state of Florida. And our institution and our nursing department stepped forward, recognized the need, and have been very successful in that program.
Yes, I heard for years about a nursing shortage, and I know there's not really one in this area because of the nursing schools that we have here, but nationwide, that's still a need, isn't it?
There's absolutely still a nursing shortage, but what happens, even for those that are already RNs and are already working, the hospitals are wanting them to get to that BSN level. So even those that are already employed need that next credential.
Is there any thought of taking this any further once this is established from, okay, well, now let's see if we can get people to get their master's?
Absolutely. Obviously, many of our institutions offer graduate degrees, and once students become members of UCF or FIU or the University of West Florida or Florida Gulf Coast University or any of our private institutions that are working with us, the opportunity exists for them then to go on and get their master's degree. So I would hope great marketing once they're on campus to encourage them to see what those next steps are, because what happens a lot of times, if someone makes a commitment to go back to school, then more doors start opening for them, and then they see more opportunities that education would assist with.
How was it determined that, okay, UWF, you're going to do the RN to BSN program, and St. Thomas, you're going to do this, and Barry University, you're going to do this? Is it just an area of expertise for each institution?
What we did is we started Complete Florida. We had an invitation to participate to institutions around the state that were interested in being involved, that knew maybe they were serving adult learners. We all serve adult learners in all of our institutions, but this conscious effort on the students that have some college and no degree, many institutions stepped forward and said, we want to do this. We then looked very closely at the department. The Board of Governors had done a study called the Educational Access and Attainment Commission, worked together with Department of Economic Opportunity and many business leaders around the state of Florida to identify areas where we were producing graduates, but not enough graduates to fill the workforce needs. Those specific program areas were the ones that we asked institutions to look into their campuses to see if they would have the ability to deliver those programs in an accelerated format, fully online, multiple times per year, and they then sent proposals to us. From there, we looked across the spectrum of programs so that we would have a balance of IT, for example, information technology. Well, there's a lot of flavors of IT. Everyone, you know, some people get computer science at a bachelor's level. There may be other people that are interested in getting an AS degree in something very specific related to networking. And so there's a lot of options that are available even in each of the sectors, so that if someone does not have an associate's degree, that'd be their first thing that they would want to do is get that. So we looked at the whole portfolio of recommendations that institutions provided to us, and then together made the decisions as to which programs would make sense.
Are any new schools in the pipeline with new programs coming up?
We have about five schools, five institutions, public, private, state universities, state colleges, that have contacted us about being involved in phase two of Complete Florida. And we definitely want to include as many institutions as possible in the initiative. We want to fully launch the 11 institutions that we have in our partnership, because there's a lot to launching these. So we want to get them launched first, and then we'll be accepting a second round of proposals for more institutions.
Something just came to mind. You mentioned that private institutions are involved. What about cost? Is the private institution going to charge the same as a public one would?
Well, interestingly, one of the things, so the legislation itself that came out a year ago said that our job, recruit, retain students, you know, some college, no degree, but also figure out a way to streamline the admissions process for them so they don't have to go through all of these different steps to admissions, because they've been admitted somewhere before already. So trying to streamline that admissions process and make recommendations on how to reduce the cost of distance learning. And so this year, in the first year of operation, all institutions maintain their regular costs, so tuition and fees, public, private, whatever your costs were. In the second year, we have to present a report to the Board of Governors and to the Florida College System, and then also to the legislature on strategies for reducing the costs. And right now, we're at the point of collecting data from each of the institutions about different fees that are charged. And if you're fully online student, should you really be paying a specific fee? Is there a way to collapse some of those costs? Is there a way to use alternative methods to reduce the costs? Things like prior learning assessment, recognizing what the adult already brings to the table. Is there a way that we can give them some type of a way to prove what they know through something like a prior learning assessment or some kind of tests in advance of them moving through their degree plan so they can accelerate forward? And then also we're looking at competency-based education, which would be another method to reduce costs. So right now all the institutions are charging whatever their current tuition and fee structure is, but we're making recommendations and we're testing some pretty cool things to try to reduce the costs of this kind of program.
Okay, but I imagine then that a private institution, if you go through one of them, would be a little more costly than, say, going through UWF or PCS.
It varies. If you look at each of the different institutions, Hodges University is already doing competency-based education, and they're already doing, there's a model around the country where people are paying twice a year and taking all the courses that they can during that period of time, and Hodges is already trying that. So we're learning from them in that sense. Obviously, state colleges, their costs are a little bit less, and so for students that want to pursue that pathway, that exists. What happens a lot of times is we advise the students, we're advising them to whatever institution makes the most sense for them. What we find, and this is pretty well documented in the distance learning literature, is that regardless of whether you're taking distance learning courses or face-to-face, students typically like to be within 100 miles of their institution. I don't know why that is, whether it's just the opportunity. If they want to drive in, they could. But what we're probably going to find is the cost is going to be one factor, but probably proximity is going to be another. So we'll see how it all pans out.
How can people find out more?
Go to CompleteFlorida.org, and our website has a list of all the degree programs. It has an 800 number who they should call right away and get someone to talk them through the process and what they should do next. What I find is that when you talk to each individual person, each have their own story. Let us help them figure out how to take their existing credit, their existing experience, and put it to use and move them forward.
Dr. Pam Northrup is Associate Provost and Executive Director of the Innovation Institute at the University of West Florida in Pensacola. Again, you can learn more about the program Complete Florida at CompleteFlorida.org. Still to come, we head up I-95 to hear about students in New York struggling with tough graduation requirements. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1244. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. New York State has some of the toughest graduation requirements in the country. Students are required to pass 5 different subject tests. These exams can be especially challenging for students who are disengaged or struggling in school. As part of the series Educating on the Edge, WNYC's Beth Verdig takes a look at what one school is doing to help their students get over the finish line.
Pull aside any student at West Brooklyn Community High School, and there's a good chance they've flunked at least one Regents test.
I took it last year, but I failed it. I wasn't coming like that to that class.
I mean, I didn't do the essay last year because I just never went to English class, so I didn't really get what they were saying to me.
Some of the times they even give me topics that I don't even know about that much, like the Dust Bowl or suburbanization. Yeah, I don't know this.
West Brooklyn is a transfer school, so by definition, it's open only to students who have tried at least 1 year of high school someplace else. Principal Gloria Rosario says most of these kids had spotty attendance, which hurt them on the state exams. But even kids who work hard after transferring here get hung up on the tests.
It does put a squeeze because it feels so punitive. I've had a student just look at me, how am I being punished for this? I've passed all my classes, I've changed my, attendance, I'm a better person than I was, and there's still this one exam.
Part of the problem has to do with the state changing its standards. Students used to be able to pass with a 55, but now they need to score a 65 on all 5 exams. For some kids, that's a breeze. But for those who have had big gaps in their education, it's a huge hurdle, largely because they didn't master basic skills. At West Brooklyn, one common weakness is academic writing.
Nick, will you please read what the purpose of an introduction is?
English teacher Erin Bauer is teaching her students how to write an introductory paragraph. They read from a handout listing what makes a strong introduction.
An effective introduction paragraph includes the following: a hook, an interesting statement that...
This is something many students learn in middle school, but not these kids, largely because they were absent so much. Cesar Fernandez says the explicit instruction is helping him catch up.
After coming here, I think it's a lot easier to write essays because they explain it like step by step and very simple.
Fernandez is 18 and says he's made up a lot of credits since he came to West Brooklyn over a year ago. He's hoping to graduate in June if he passes 2 more Regents exams. 18-year-old George Chike is also hoping to graduate this year. He says his writing has improved, but he needs help with reading comprehension.
That's still my weak part, because when I'm reading, later on I forget what happened in the beginning of the book. I just got to work on that.
English teacher Erin Bauer pushes back when I ask if it's unusual for high school students to need so much hand-holding to write an essay.
You wouldn't expect to see among students.
This is the 4th school I've taught at, and it's very common.
To do this much explanation,
yes,
of how to write an introduction, how
Absolutely.
To write an essay?
Yes. It is not unusual that this is going on in a lot of places. So it's not particular to our students.
And she's right when you look at the data. The state says less than a quarter of the city's kids graduate ready for college as defined by their Regents scores.
I'm right up here, George.
But transfer schools like West Brooklyn are dealing with students who have trouble just coming to school. On this day, more than half of Bauer students are absent. There are just 6 kids, including Nicole Escalante. She failed the English Regents last year and was hoping to take it again this month. but she's been missing a lot of classes for doctor's appointments because she's pregnant.
It's hard when you miss days, and I don't want to take something I know I'm not going to understand, and I know I'm going to fail.
The administrators at West Brooklyn say life often gets in the way for their students. Many of them are parents or need to work part-time.
Well, you know, that's kind of important when you do a test to not lose it.
English teacher Frank Esposito says the English Regents can be especially demanding. It contains multiple forms of poetry teachers don't always have time to cover.
Listen, I became an English teacher because I used to be like, you know, Wuthering Heights and the wind and the passion, okay, and all that stuff. But the thing is, we don't have necessarily the time to dedicate to sonnet and free verse and elegy. You know, yeah, that stuff is beautiful and wonderful, but I'm trying to get these guys, like, to work in a literate society.
Some education groups are urging the state to reduce the number of tests required to graduate or to offer alternatives to these high-stakes exams. A committee was appointed to study what the state calls multiple pathways to graduation that would maintain rigorous standards while offering some flexibility. But so far, there have been no decisions. For WNYC, I'm Beth Fertig.
Are your goals in life making you depressed? Well, cheer up. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Effective goal setting is an important component of success in any area of life. Joanne Dixon, research director in the Institute of Psychology, Health, and Society at the University of Liverpool, explores the link between depression and the ability to set specific goals.
Our research found that people with depression have more generalized personal goals than those who are never depressed. In this study, we analyzed the personal goals made by people who suffered with clinical depression and those who didn't. The participants were asked to list goals which they would like to achieve. Goals were categorized for their specificity. For example, an abstract goal such as to be happy would represent a general goal, whereas a goal such as improve my 5-mile marathon time this summer would represent a more specific goal. Our results showed that whilst both groups generated the same number of goals, people with depression listed goals which were more general and abstract, and they were far more likely to give non-specific reasons for achieving their goals. Having very broad abstract goals may maintain and exacerbate depression. Goals that are not specific are harder to visualize because they lack a specific focus. This may result in reduced expectation and motivation, making it more difficult to achieve personal goals. We know that depression is associated with negative thoughts and a tendency to overgeneralize in relation to how people think about themselves and their past memories. Our study found that this trait also encompasses personal goals. Importantly, our findings could inform the development of new ways of treating clinical depression in helping depressed people to set specific goals.
That was Joanne Dixon of the University of Liverpool. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at wamc.org.